Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go. If it's Tuesday, it's that time again, and we light it up prime time. It's the American Sports History Podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend out there in Cleveland, Ohio, Peter Ray. Yours truly, about 2,500 miles to the west in humid Los Angeles. Mark Mancini over here producing this fine podcast. If you happen to miss it, 30 minutes goes by quick, archive edition, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. As I lay the red carpet down, because it's more him, less of me, put that podium in its place and hand off that nice mic, Peter the Threes. How are you? How can people get a hold of you? And, you know, every time this guy comes in, I can't help but think, Tim McCarver, Steve Carlton, Larry Bird, maybe Magic Johnson. You guys are joined at the hip. And man, oh man, take it away as I man the boards and let you guys get to it, because I appreciate this every week.
Hi, Mark. I'm doing well. I have a YouTube channel. It's my name, Peter, J.REA. And you're absolutely right. Tonight, for the 27th time, wow, what a gift. We have a guy who played Major League Baseball from 1971 to 1981 with the Chicago Cubs, Oakland A's, L.A. Dodgers, and San Francisco Giants. He won two World Series championships in 1973 and 1974, 395 career stolen bases, two-time American League stolen base leader in 1974 and 1976, more than 1,000 hits. First Oakland A's designated hitter, won a National League title in 1978 with the Dodgers, led the American League three times in total chances per game, twice in putouts, once in assists from the outfield on double plays. Welcome to the show, my dear wife Alice's favorite podcast guest and the starting center fielder and leadoff hitter for the coolest MLB team of all time, the Oakland A's from the early 1970s, Mr. Bill North.
Hey there. Hey, Atlas, how are you?
So, Bill, two weeks ago, we talked about how do you have anything more to say about your experience as the honorary coach for the American League All-Star team in 2023?
Oh, yeah, I got plenty to say. I told you about the gift bag thing.
Right.
And I always wanted one, and I was running off at the mouth and too busy and stuff, and they closed the door on me, and I didn't get one. But I'm
right.
Still thinking about that. I think that's gone beyond. You know, I reached out and sent out some feelers to see if it was possible, but I haven't heard. People are ignoring my efforts.
Okay.
But that's all right.
Anything else from the guys that you saw? You saw Ralph Garr, Dave Winfield, Lou Piniella, Greg Vaughn, Tony Clark, Cito Gaston, and Dusty Baker. Anything else that comes to mind from seeing those fellas?
Oh, and Mark McLemore, he's been on the show. We got cut off last week. I don't know what happened, but, you know, that's the devil works in his own way. But
I got plans. I got plans. You can only do one at a time.
Mark McLemore. You guys, I enjoyed those. You had two interviews with him. Those were good. Those have been good.
Very interesting man, and just a wonderful person. We're going to have him back.
Yeah, you guys are talking about George Hendrick. I enjoyed that since he was a star player for the Cleveland Indians in the 70s.
George was smooth. You used to call him easy. And just a hell of a ball player, but the way he played the game was so smooth and easy, everybody thought he was loafing, but he always made the plays. Yeah.
Yeah, Mark, it was nice. Mark McLemore came from the next generation, but he knew you from as a young guy, so that was cool having a guy with one of his heroes talking MLB from different eras.
Yeah, yeah. And he's special to me. I consider him a good friend. And gosh, 19 years in the big leagues, so he did something right. Yeah.
I've spent the last 2 weeks watching 1973 World Series Game 3. I want to throw some stuff out from that game. You guys just celebrated the 50th anniversary of that team. Casey Stengel threw out the first pitch from the stands. It was in New York, a night game, Shea Stadium. Tom Seaver against Catfish Hunter. Incredible. Rusty Staub's shoulder was better, so he was playing. Kurt Gowdy, Lindsey Nelson, Mets announcer, and Tony Kubek. A's won 3-2 in 11 innings. And before the game, they were. I think Tony Kubek was talking about interviewing Sal Bando, and he asked him about the Mike Andrews controversy, and Bando said the team was used to it, and it helped calm them down. Interesting.
imagine.
Reggie Jackson in the game was on deck with an air-resistant propeller attached to his bat, making the bat heavier. Kurt Gowdy called Tom Seaver the best pitcher in baseball. Now, the Mets scored two in the bottom of the first, and that was it. They didn't score again. Wayne Garrett gave up Garrett home run. And all throughout that, Catfish Hunter stayed so calm and cool on the mound, which really impressed me.
That's all he did. If he had a piece of hay in his mouth, he wouldn't have been sitting on a hay bale. And he's at home on that mound. He looked like he was on the farm, sitting on a hay bale, but he could go.
You know, there was one play. I can't remember what inning, but he made an error. It was a ball back that he fielded, and he didn't make the play. And you know, he didn't react at all in terms of being disciplined. He was just immediately, all right, move on. And about a calm guy, cool dude, calm guy out there.
You're talking about a professional and one of the greatest people you'd ever want to meet. And, hey, man, he didn't let nothing bother him. But if you're that good, what should bother you?
Go ahead.
I saw him throwing the game one time, 27 straight strikes, and you never even knew.
Yeah, I thought, wow, Tom Seaver and Catfish Hunter, here they get two, and that's all they got. So and Dick Williams had Blue Moon Odom thrown in the bullpen in the first. So he was, anyway, he talked about more stuff here. Cleon Jones, Kurt Gowdy called Cleon Jones the Mets' best athlete. And he talked about how Jones and Tommy Adjee were childhood friends. Vic Davalia was in
Mobile.
Right.
They grew up in right. Billy Williams there and Willie McCovey and all of them.
Vic Davalia was in center since you were hurt. Kurt Gowdy during the game, there was a shot of Yogi Berra in the bullpen. He called Yogi Berra the matinee idol of America. and then later he puts meat and the potatoes on the table. So that was pretty good.
Now, a good player.
The Oakland A's had 100. Go ahead.
No, it's all right.
The Oakland A's had 127 stolen bases during the season. The Mets had 27. And Kurt Gowdy said that the A's were missing Bill North, who had 54 stolen bases, double the Mets team total.
Tyler was one with 54. I have 53.
I thought Bud Harrelson and Felix Mian could have stole more, but I guess Yogi Berra wasn't, you know, from his era, wasn't a stolen base era for him, and he was an American League guy.
Yeah. Well, that's the way they ran it over there. But it was the kind of thing that you got to do what you can do. They must have did pretty well. Everybody was at home watching us on TV. So it wasn't no joke that they were there.
No. Gil Hodges' widow was at the game. He had, you know, was the manager of the 69 Mets. Now, there was a play. There was a ball hit to right, runner on second. Reggie Jackson caught the ball and threw a strike to third. Don Hahn held at second. What a and Sal Bando held the ball over third like a catcher catching a strike. Wow.
Making a good arm. Yeah.
Yeah. What a play. And then there was a play, let's see, Felix Mian had a long drive to center. Vic Davalio made a good catch. In the seventh inning, Dick Williams had three pinch hitters, Pat Burke, Jesus Alou, and Darren Johnson. So there's a lot of guys moving around. He ended up with Ted Kubiak at second. I think they took Dick Green out. Gene Tennis was behind the plate. Fossey was out. And there was a play where I noticed John Milner, when he get on base, he'd take off his batting helmet and put on a baseball cap, his baseball cap. Now, go ahead.
You could do that in those days. I always kept my hat on, though, my helmet.
Rusty Staub was throwing the ball underhand from right because he couldn't throw it. Now, Tom Seaver had 12 strikeouts in the game. Kurt Gowdy said that Tony Kubek, the old shortstop, was enjoying the play of Bert Campanaris and Bud Harrelson. And then, let's see, Joe Rudy set a World Series record, had 7 putouts. The organist played an Irish jig with Tug McGraw on the mound. Let's see, then they had eventually Angel Mangual was in center. Vic Davalio was moved to first. And then in the 10th, radio cover the video is gone. It's just radio coverage of the game. Willie Mays in the 11th, bottom of the 10th, had his last appearance in baseball as a pinch hitter. It was a forced play at second. He didn't play after that. And then in the 11th, there was a ball. Bert Campanaris singled Ted Kubiak the go ahead run. Raleigh Fingers closed it out. You guys won 3-2. The fans were leaving, actually, when the game was still tied. I guess they were saying, they need to go to work. One of those guys said, the Mets slogan was, you got to believe. And then I think Kurt Gowdy said, they don't believe right now. You guys are up 2-1 in the series. And what else can you say about Game 3? What a game.
Oh, I know. Shoot, I wasn't there, Peter.
But those were your guys, man.
Hey, man, I was watching on TV like the rest of us. But actually, I was at the ballpark. But I was just glad. Shoot, I got a ring out of it.
Right.
Yeah. But those guys, yeah. Yeah, I was kind of disappointed that I didn't even get to suit up. But it was But as far as the team moving me out of the way and being a teammate, that was we won it all. I like to think that I contributed to us getting there.
Oh, you did?
Those guys carried it the rest of the way. And I had a good team. Shoot, those guys were wonderful.
Yeah, and that was a great World Series, the Mets and, all these guys you guys and the Mets and Catfish Hunter and Tom Seaver, you can't get anything. How can you have a better starting pitchers in a game?
Well, you could have Spahn and Marischal.
When
Marischal threw 256 pitches and Spahn threw 201. I was thinking about that the other day. Now they can't go 100. Now.
Let's talk about the great. No. What are your? Let's talk about the greatest players from the 70s. Jimmy Winn. What are your thoughts on him?
Joey Cannon. He can hit them high and far. Yeah. I used my teammate down there in Los Angeles that year, and in the 74 series. If Joe Rudy or I, he hit a ball out there in left center field, if Joe Rudy or I had been there alone, we both would have caught it, but we were there together. And I tipped it out of his glove or whatever going for the ball. It was one of those in-betweeners. And shoot. But we ended up kind of, we were 3-2 in those guys, too. That score 3-2 comes up a lot with the A's because that's all they needed.
Oh, that's the ball. Did the ball go over the fence, over the wall? That
yeah.
By Jimmy Wynn?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you guys were looking in your gloves. What happened to the ball?
Yeah, that was a bummer, but yeah, all in all, it wasn't like we weren't trying.
Okay, another guy from the 70s. There's a listing of the 1,000 best. 121 is Diego Seguí. What do you remember about Diego Seguí?
Oh, he was an older guy, but he could pitch. He pitched the first game for the Oakland A's in Oakland, didn't he?
Don't know.
I think he did.
Uh-huh.
He was down there in San Diego also, and he stayed around for a long time, had a long career. You know, was a nice man, tough man. Yeah, strong.
How about Richie Zisk?
Richie Zisk. He's a Pittsburgh Pirate. He could bang, too. He was over there with the lumber company. Yeah, he's a good hitter. Those guys carried big bats, boy. Richie had a big bat.
Another guy from the 70s, Mike Cuellar.
I got him, Peter. I remember him. He's in my book. I didn't hit too many home runs, but I got him. I was a pretty good right-handed hitter. Like I say, they made me switch it when I got to the big leagues, but I like to hit off of Cuellar. Those other guys in Baltimore, I didn't like to hit off so much. Well, McNally, I kind of liked him too. But JP, and he could pitch, JP.
So that was some rivalry you guys had. That was your top rivalry in the American League, the Baltimore Orioles.
Toughest thing I ever had to do in my career. Toughest thing I ever had to do in my career was play against Baltimore Orioles. Because they were just like us. Yeah. Great team. But we beat them. We'd go and take them in five and then go to the World Series. Yeah.
Now, the guy you just got off, you talked with for 2 hours today, Darrell Evans.
That's my boy. I love talking to Darrell. He's a good man. He's my teammate over there in San Francisco. He could tell stories. We get on there, we get to talking. He's a wonderful conversationalist. I love talking to him, too. He's going to be on the show next week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
For the second time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good guy.
He's been on here 10 times in a row, and we've never scratched the surface of all the stuff he knows.
Okay, another guy, Jim Bibby.
He could run it up there. I think didn't he throw a no-hitter?
He did for Texas. And he was on the 79 Pirates.
Wasn't I the last out again?
Huh? Oh,
I think
who?
I was the last out of that one, too.
Who? You were the last out?
Yeah. Everybody else went 0-3, and I went 0-4.
Oh, because he walked the guy?
Yeah. And, Dick Bosman, Jerry Royce, and Jim Bibby. I think I was the last out of all those guys throwing no hitters.
No kidding. Well, that's something. Yeah.
You don't want to find it.
Huh?
You got resources. You could find that out.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Jim Bibby, he was in Cleveland, and then he was on the 79 Pirates. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big dude.
I mean, he could throw that ball. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes he'd get wild, though. Yeah, he's easy to run on if you could get to first base. Yeah.
Now, one of the guys who was the three guys had 40 home runs for the Atlanta Braves, and that aside from Henry Aaron and Darrell Evans, Davey Johnson. What do you remember about Davey Johnson?
I remember him mostly at the Mets. He was a second baseman, big guy, along Bobby Gritch, and he was a big second baseman. But both of them were good players. But, you know, he had a good career. And down there with Eddie Matthews and Darrell and Hank.
Did Did you play against him? Was he with Baltimore when you played against Baltimore? Was he gone already?
I think he was gone.
They had and Bobby Gritch was
they
in.
Had, they had, who's the guy? Rettman was, let me see. Second baseman's Gritch. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think he was gone. He might have even been the manager at that time.
Okay, another going through the seventh greatest players of the 1970s. 127, Gene Tennis.
That's my teammate, Steamboat. He could play. Good man. Tough man. If you ever got in a fight, you want him on your side. And Lord knows I did get in a couple. And he was right there. He was right there with me. You know, hey, good man, good man.
So which did he like to play better, catcher or first base?
Catcher, I think. You know, he was a good catcher.
But when they brought in Fosse, he was on first a lot because of Fosse. When they brought in Fosse,
but then Claudel Washington came up and he had to play, and so they moved Rudy to first base.
Okay.
And then moved Tennis behind the plate, and Fosse had limited playing time after that.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Gino Tenacci.
That's my boy. I'd go to the Mets for him anytime.
Okay, another guy from the 70s, another teammate, Sal Bando. He's number 20, 128.
Tell you what, Captain Sal, he was our leader. Of one of the best teams of all time, this was the leader. And he was a real captain. And he was a great teammate. And he'd give you everything he had.
So what did he do as captain?
Shielded us from Finley. Yeah.
So would he communicate with Dick Williams and Charlie Finley? Huh?
Huh?
Would he communicate?
Go ahead, Peter.
Would he communicate stuff from guys to Dick Williams and Charlie Finley?
Yeah, he was a buffer. Dick wasn't a problem. Charlie could sometimes get to be a little offensive. But Sal handled that pretty well. He kind of, hey, man. He had his finger on the pulse of that whole relationship, and he would tell us how to respond. And more often than not, he was right. So,
yeah, I've been reading this book by Jason Turbo, Dynastic Bombastic, Reggie Raleigh Catfish and Charlie Finley Swinging A's.
Yeah.
And now this – What Charlie Finley did to Vida Blue after his big year, I guess it was in 71, was just ridiculous. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, Finley was so talented, you know, but it was just like so destructive to this guy. He's such a tremendous player.
Yeah.
You know all
person.
About that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Any comments on that?
He wanted him to change his name to True Blue.
Well, just the whole, you know, he'd made a ton of money. I mean, Vida Blue was the sensation of MLB in 71, and they were packing stadiums all over, and Finley really made a lot of money, and Blue mm-hmm. wanted to get paid, and Finley was just so stubborn, and it was crazy, you know, and
yeah.
then...
Well, that was his spirit, and his constitution was if somebody put him in the corner, he is gonna get stubborn and go against all reason to hold his position, kind of like a lot of other people that we're seeing right now, and it was destructive, and that.
There's a quote here from the negotiations between Finley and Blue. They were meeting, and he said, "I know you pitched 300 innings. I know you had 24 complete games and 8 shutouts. I know you led the league in ERA. I know you won the Cy Young and MVP. I don't have to pay you.
Sounds like Charlie.
Oh, my gosh.
He to the point of being destructive sometimes. And I think that we could have won more World Series, I believe. But he started thinking it was him. Yeah.
There was I think this is in 71, there was a fight between Reggie Jackson and Mike Epstein. And and there's a story, Catfish Hunter walked by the whirlpool later in the day. Rookie George Hendrick, having a soak, called him over. Who the hell grabbed Epstein and broke up the fight? I wanted to see Epstein kick the crap out of Reggie. Oh, my gosh. That's
I wasn't there, so I don't know. You're not getting me on that one, Peter.
I thought, oh, wow, listen to that. And then there was
trouble with my own Reggie stories.
And there's a quote here from 1972. Yeah, Mudcat Grant, I guess, was on the A's, and he was talking about after this whole drama with Finley and Vida Blue, and he said, Vida Blue's soul is broken. His heart just isn't in it anymore.
I know that there was a lot of words said that couldn't be taken back, and it was the kind of thing that Finley was trying to dominate Vida and showing that he was the big man and that, and Vida being a young player and that didn't really take to that real well, and he didn't know what to do. I mean, you can only get so much advice and that, but Vida was classically between a rock and a hard spot. And to this day, I'm for Vida in anything that happens. So.
Yeah, that was just so tragic. There's another passage here. It says, Angel Mangual was perpetually in the doghouse for mental mistakes like forgetting the number of outs, dropping catchable fly balls, and failing to hit the cutoff man. Any comment on that?
Got me my job.
Right.
Got me my job.
It's nice you went to Puerto Rico. He's gone now. They went down for his memorial service. That's really nice.
Yeah. Angel was a good friend of mine, but he missed the cutoff man one time against Baltimore, and Dick tore up everything in the locker room. After that one, he didn't like to lose to Earl Weaver.
We got comments. Jay from Tallahassee, Florida, says he loves this show. He's talking about how our teams are playing right now, I think. The Guardians and the Astros, look, they got you guys on separate coasts for that reason. Steve from Corvallis, Oregon, love the 72 Tigers. Sorry, Bill. He's talking about Len Barker, tremendous pitcher for Cleveland. Albert from Poway, California, is predicting a Padres and Angels World Series. We got time here for another player from the 70s, Ken Griffey Sr.
Good player, big red machine. He batted second, I think. And Geronimo would hit first, I think, over there. But, Ken Griffey Sr. is the daddy of Ken Griffey Jr. And so them genes right there, he had to be able. He was a good player just naturally. Look what he spawned.
Yeah, it's hard to believe you had guys like Bobby Bonds and Ken Griffey Sr. who were tremendous players in the 70s, and they had sons who were better than them.
Isn't that something?
It's just beyond belief. Unbelievable, as Mark Mancini likes to say. The time has flown by. Bill, do you have any final comments tonight for our audience?
Thank you, Peter, and audience. I always appreciate you. Thank you for hanging around listening to this old guy. And Peter and I, we try to do the best we can, but we wouldn't be anything without you guys. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you. Next week we're going to have Larry Sorensen, Major League pitcher from 1977 to 1988 with the Milwaukee Brewers, St. Louis Cardinals, Cleveland Indians, Oakland A's, Chicago Cubs, Montreal Expos, and San Francisco Giants. And in 2 weeks, we will have, from tonight, we'll have the starting center fielder and leadoff hitter for the coolest MLB team of all time, my dear wife Alice's favorite podcast guest, a man with a great sense of humor and a good heart, Mr. Bill North.
Thank you so much, Peter. You're kind.
Oh, you're kind. And, well, I can't believe we've been having you on all these times. What a tremendous thrill for me to talk with a guy on that team, the coolest MLB team of all time. What's that?
Let me know when you get tired of me.
Oh, that's not going to happen. And you're not tired of me and my stumbling ways.
Oh, come on, man. That's what makes us good. We're both stumbling.
We're out of time. Dear listener, may the road rise to meet you. May the wind be at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face and rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Good night, everybody. Thanks a million again. Mr. Bill North.
Thank you, Peter.
Wonderful.
God bless you.
God bless you.